the newly insured will continue to use the emergency room as their primary care. And I think what will sort of push them over the edge is the delay in trying to find a primary care physician who will take them.
I see.
Now, certainly, in an effort to address the gap between the demand side of this, there's going to be a lot more people that are going to be demanding health care, and the supply side, that then you get into the issues of licensed independent practitioners like nurse practitioners and physician assistants and the like. You know, could they offset some of that? And I think that's more of an issue. It's definitely a political hot button issue because scope of practice expansion hits every legislature in the country on a perennial basis. Mm-hmm. But I think for hospitalists, I think in a collaborative type in agreement, where it's a physician-run healthcare team, I think that those non-physician healthcare providers could help to support the physician hospital.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I certainly could foresee that. Now that certainly translates, or that actually is a great segue into workload, and I do think that the workload will increase, not just because we'll have more people clamoring for healthcare and see patients that are perhaps sicker on in their disease. Remember, there's no pre-existing condition. So these people that are signing up, I mean, the real thing, the real concern with the exchanges right now is that the people who are trying to sign up are not the 25-year-old young healthies. You know, the people that are signing up earlier, the people who have a lot of pre-existing conditions, a lot of chronic disease that are probably costing the system a fair amount of money, and now without having that pre-existing disease exclusion, those guys are clamoring for healthcare early.
Right.
Which of course goes to the financial underpinnings, but with respect to the workload, we'll see patients. I believe that we will see patients that are further along in their disease process in a more acute, more dire need for healthcare.
Okay.
But the other thing, the other piece to this that goes outside really of a patient physician interaction is there's a lot of additional regulations and administrative burdens, if you will. That we're going to have to deal with, you know, as individual hospitalists and then as a hospital on a whole, you know, the whole pay for performance, value based purchasing, the reporting of healthcare associated conditions, the never events, all of these other things have been built in, and I understand the rationale, but I'm a little hesitant to say that these things are going to be beneficial from a workflow perspective.
Mm-hmm.
I may not argue with whether these things, I mean, that's a different conversation, you know, whether I think that these things are the right things to report or not. But the fact that they're in the law means that there will be some reporting. And remember, as we do this reporting, somewhere the clock keeps going. And and that means that either my day is longer because for every patient that I see for 20 minutes or 30 minutes, I have another 15 minutes or 20 minutes of paperwork to fill out, making sure that I check off the appropriate check boxes or what have you, or I'm delaying the time of my departure from my day because I have to fill out these additional things now. So I think that the workload, I think, will actually increase.
Does that
definitely in the short term, I think.
Okay. And then, I mean, I guess, and to your point then, does that then increase pressure on hospitals to perhaps devote more resources to support staff that would alleviate that workload so that you're not the, you know, person who is, you know, spending your time dealing with paperwork or holding hands and helping navigate patients through the system, you know, when you should be actually treating, you know, helping to coordinate care and treat the patients. I mean, is it the expectation that hospitals may increase kind of support staff to sort of alleviate that workload concern?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, increasing support staff certainly makes a lot of rational sense to do that, to offload that administrative burden onto so that the hospitalist can see patients and maybe somebody else, some case managers or other staff or some ancillary personnel can go along with the hospitalist and tackle these issues that need to be reported.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the larger picture, I think, needs to be taken into account, and that is that the objective, one of the multiple objectives of the ACA is really to not have patients go to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, ultimately, the idea is to build this. If you think about a football team, you know, you kind of have a primary care, preventive, front line, you know, that prevents the patients from getting to the hospital, which would be like the quarterback. You know, you don't mm-hmm. want the patients coming to the hospital unless they absolutely need to. I think in the short term, we're going to see exactly the opposite of that until patients get into integrated systems and whatnot. But how that relates to the hiring of this ancillary staff is if hospitals feel squeezed financially
mm-hmm.
from CMS readmission penalties or the never events or the hospital-acquired conditions or the fact that hospitals are having reduced, like we have reductions in the low-income pool, the
mm-hmm.
disproportionate share hospitals are going to
mm-hmm.
get
mm-hmm.
payment reductions. So all of these things diminish the cushion, the financial cushion that hospitals have, which they could theoretically use to hire these ancillary personnel.